Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Motivational Intelligence Podcast. I'm Sean Johnson, and it's our job on this podcast to deconstruct for you what makes people and organizations successful. And this episode is more on the personal side. We're talking about how to get rich. So when Dave was a younger guy, he met this man named Jerry, who was a mailman. And after having a conversation with Jerry about some things that were going on in Dave's life, he found out that Jerry the mailman, who had never made more than $50,000 in his life, was actually a multimillionaire. And he taught Dave a lot of different lessons about how to manage his money and to grow his net worth. So this is actually a two-part series. This first part is about getting control over your money, and that was the first step for Dave. And the second part is going to be about building your net worth, and that'll come out next week. After this conversation with Dave, I actually went through and created my own financial documents for myself, thinking of myself as a business and putting together my own balance sheet, income statement, cash flow statement, all those kinds of things. And it was actually super helpful. So hopefully listening to this episode does for you what it did for me. Until next time, please reach out to us on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all those places, and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening to this. We'd love to hear what you think and what else you'd like us to talk about. So until next time, enjoy this episode.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Two Logical. Two Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Two Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with: Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.
All right, we got our cappuccinos. We are good to go. How are you feeling, Dave?
Feeling all right. A little bit of cold coming on, but short of that, you know.
Yeah, you're mixing the cough drop with the cappuccino, which I gotta imagine is an interesting combo.
It is mentholyptus latte is a you know. I think I might sell the rights to Starbucks.
Yeah, you're a pioneer.
There you go.
Is it any good?
If anybody walks into Starbucks and the mentholyptal,
you heard it here first.
You heard it here first.
Exactly.
People. That's right. I got to rush out to the patent office and see if I can get a lockdown on it before Starbucks.
Get that trademark, baby.
Exactly. It's one of my million-dollar ideas. You know, years ago, I read an article where they said that the average person will have $7 million ideas in the course of their lifetime.
Really?
Yeah.
Seven. All right. That's a good spot. I feel like I believe that.
There you go.
I think that, you know, difference is most people don't really do much about it.
That's exactly it.
Yeah. All right. So that's actually, this is a good segue. So where I want to start is, who is the millionaire mailman?
The millionaire mailman.
Yeah.
So, when I was in college, I worked at a health club.
Yeah.
And there was a whole assortment of people at the health club. And one of them was this guy, Jerry, who was a mailman. And so I got to know him. I would come in and help him work out, you know, those kind of things. And so later in my life, I didn't really know much about Jerry other than the fact that he was a mailman and he was a member of the club. Later in my life, you know, Jerry retired and he played a much bigger role in my life than just some guy I met at the gym.
Yeah. Huh. So what was going on? Because you'd mentioned a story about Jerry. What was going on and in your life? So he was retired. Mm-hmm. He was a retired mailman. And how did you get to know more about Jerry, and what kind of role did he play in your life? What did he do for you?
So, you know, I'd come out of college. I was in my second job outside of college, and then I left there to come to Two Logical, mm-hmm. and in my first year at Two Logical, you know, the company was really in its kind of launch phase.
Yeah.
I think I made $2,000 that year. And that was also the year that Michelle and I got married. It was also the year that we bought our first house. You know, she was finishing up her nursing degree, so, you know, she didn't really have a lot of money coming in. And
so a lot going out, not much coming in.
Exactly. And so basically what I did to, you know, help us to, you know, get through things is, you know, at the time there were all these credit card offers where, you know, you could get 0% interest for 6 months and all that kind of stuff. So I saw that as my kind of my financial panacea, you know, so I started borrowing money on credit cards. And it got to the point where I had a little bit over $38,000 in credit card debt.
Oof.
Yeah. So no money coming in,
yeah.
38 grand of credit card debt. Yikes. You know, not exactly a recipe for financial prosperity.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So basically it got to the point where I was using basically one credit card to make a minimum payment on another credit card.
Okay.
And, you know, just so I could kind of keep floating, you know, us along. But as you can well imagine, I mean, the stress level that comes from,
got
you know,
me through the roof.
Oh my God, it was ridiculous. And, I Michelle and I were fighting over money, like stupid things, you know?
Sure.
I mean, I still remember to this day when we were grocery shopping one time and, she wanted to buy a little can of clams, right? Mm. And I don't know, it was probably $3, you know?
Yeah.
And I remember we got into an argument at the grocery store about, I'm like, we can't afford those, you know?
Yeah.
She goes, it's $3. And I'm, you know, but, you know, I was trying to shield her from everything that was going on.
Yeah.
So I was kind of
bearing the brunt of it.
Exactly.
So she didn't really have a full picture
No idea, you know? Yeah. She probably wouldn't have married me if she
did.
So it was, you know, there was all kinds of, you know, stress and stuff I was feeling from that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and it's kind of all on your shoulders.
Oh,
it's
my God, it was terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have the low points in our lives, you know, and that was decidedly, in hindsight, it's probably true in a lot of situations, I oftentimes our darkest times are the most valuable times when you have the ability to look in hindsight.
Yeah.
And this decidedly was for me.
Yeah.
So I knew Jerry from the gym. And one day, I was there working out, he was there working out, and we just got talking, and I made some offhanded comment, about money or grumbling about it or something like that. So Jerry, you know, he said to me, it was very casual kind of, he goes, I've always been pretty good with money, you know, and I'm like, you know, and I kind of looked at him, I was like, guy was a freaking mailman, huh?
Yeah,
you
right.
know, you know, and I don't think they pay a mailman a lot of money. You know?
Right. Yeah.
I had no idea at that point in time that, I mean, the guy was literally a multi-million-dollar mailman, you know? And
that's incredible.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't, like, what's the salary coming in, and how do you get to?
He probably never made more than 50 grand a year in his life.
That's crazy.
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't like a rich uncle or, you know, anything like that.
Well, that's what I defaulted. They're like, all right, who'd you inherit the money from?
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
you know, or, you
or,
won
or
a
was
lot
he stealing
of...
the lottery, yeah. you know, the you know, the lottery tickets that come from
right.
people or something like that, you
yeah.
know?
What I think that's always I feel like a good people like that are always good case studies for, you know, an area of life or a specific skill or anything. And Tim Ferriss has this question is who's good at this that shouldn't be?
Right.
So, you know, for when it comes to that, you know, like for a guy like that, who's really wealthy that shouldn't be,
right.
you know,
right.
like where you wouldn't think that person would be.
Yeah.
They are usually got the ones that have really figured out the principles behind it.
And that was Jerry.
Yeah.
You know? So I asked him if he had lunch with me, you know, and
did you buy or did he buy?
He did actually.
Oh, okay. That's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. 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 It was the first good. Lesson. Get,
yeah.
you know, get somebody else to pay.
Yeah.
So I kind of, you know, I laid out the situation for him, you know, and, And I said, you know, you said you were good with money. Obviously, I'm not good with money. I said so.
Which I think is an important point that you were able to admit that. All right, I'm not doing so good with this.
Yeah, I mean, there was no hiding it at that point. You know, Michelle and I were fighting about it. It's you're floating credit card to credit card.
Yeah.
And I made a you know, I said, will you teach me, you know, what it is you've learned or, you know, how do you do this? Because, you know, I'm obviously failing in this, you know, in this aspect of things.
Yeah. So you sat down with him, and I think that's an important, where you got to the point where, okay, I'm not doing so good with this. That's pretty obvious at this point. But, you know, finding somebody who is doing well with it and taking the time to try to learn from them is, I think, an important point. And probably something that, you know, like I would imagine to, you know, maybe not, and maybe for some people it's, you know, dependent, but it's, I think I could imagine a lot of people not seeking that help out because it's just, it hurts their pride too much.
It's... Sometimes desperation is a wonderful motivator, you know?
Yeah. 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 Where it's, if it's like kind of bad, then, you know, you
suck
protect
it up
the bride. Yeah.
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 Keep it quiet.
But you were kind of at the point of no return where you had to figure something out.
Absolutely. And I mean, it was just, things were just heading in a progressively worse situation. And, I'm 6 months married at that point in time. And I mean, it's just, I knew I had to do something.
Yeah. Okay, so you sit down to lunch with Jerry, and what happens in the lunch?
So, you know, first thing he asked me, he said, well, you know, tell me what's going on. So I kind of laid out the story to him. And I said, the biggest problem I've got is, I got to get to the point where, you know, I'm making more money. I said, you know, if I can just make more money, then, you know, I can afford to basically buy my way out of, of this situation. And I'll never forget how he responded. He goes, that's not going to help you at all. And I literally kind of sat back in the chair. I was like, well, what are you talking about? And he said to me, I'm trying to remember how did he phrase it. He said, being financially successful has almost nothing to do with how much money you make.
Huh. And here's a living example of that.
Exactly. You know, and I mean, I'm kind of like, huh? You know?
Right.
And
that would be very easy to dismiss if he wasn't sitting there as a mailman worth a couple million dollars.
Exactly. And so I was like, what are you talking about? And he said, because everybody thinks that financial independence is based upon the amount of money you have coming in. He said, in reality, it has very little to do with how much is coming in and everything to do with how much is going out.
Huh.
He goes, and so people, they always think about, you know, I got to make more money. But they don't realize that, you know, they're so much is flowing out on the backside that it really makes no difference. So, you know, we're sitting at the gym and having lunch, and he goes, look around here. And he goes, there's a lot of people here, successful business people. He goes, they make, you know, pretty decent incomes for themselves. He goes, if you look around, I'll bet you the vast majority of them are nowhere near as financially successful as you might think they are.
Hmm.
And he said, because think about it. He goes, these folks have... They have significant income, but they got significant expenses.
Yeah.
You know, he goes, they're paying for this, they're paying for that, they're taking expensive trips. And he said, they got a lot coming in, but they got just as much going out. So their net worth is, you know, no better than somebody who was making half of what they're making.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's an interesting, it's, you know, I think people's tendency is to, the more money you start making, you just tend to upgrade your lifestyle on the same curve of your income going up.
Exactly.
Which I guess you're kind of treading water at that point, right?
That's exactly right.
So you're sitting there at lunch and he drops this bomb on you.
Yeah. He's already level setting my thought process, you know?
Yeah, right. So this is kind of the first lesson mm-hmm. that he taught you. So if somebody, you know, if making more money doesn't necessarily make somebody rich, mm-hmm. what does?
Uh-huh. All right. So what he did is he said there's two things that you have to do. He said the first thing you've got to do is you've got to get control over your money. And he said once you've got control over your money, he goes, then you can begin to focus on building a net worth. But he said most people, they never get any control over their money, and because of that, it's almost impossible for them to build a net worth. He said, so for me, he said that was really the one thing I concentrated a lot on in my life was making sure that I had control over my money. He goes, and that's really what allowed me to build the net worth.
Yeah. So how do we, you know, in order to get control over our money, how do we do that? Where did he guide you?
So the first thing he told me is he goes, you have to put a budget in place, right? Mm. Now, you know, he said that, you know, that dirty B word, you know, I remember I got kind of reactionary. I was like, a budget.
That's what poor people have, a budget.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, yeah. And I was like, you know, I want to make a lot of money so I don't have to have a budget, you know. And he said, you know, a budget isn't something that poor people have to use. He goes, it's something that allows you, to be able to steer your money where you want to steer your money. Hmm. He goes, but you can't steer your money if you don't know where it's going.
That's a great way to put it.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of getting down onto paper. Where's my money going? So what was the process like for that? What did you do? So he says, all right, the dirty B word, you need a budget. And, after a little squirming, you give in.
Yeah.
So how did he have you, what was the next step? How did he have you work a budget?
So the first thing he did is he had me, he said, look at what all of your fixed expenses are. Mm-hmm. So fixed expense, you know, at that point in time was a mortgage, you know, fixed expense, were car payments, you know, fixed expense was insurance and, you know, all of those types of things. So he said, go through and figure out what your fixed expenses are. Mm-hmm. And he said, and then what you want to do, he goes, some of these things, he goes, you pay, you know, once a year or twice a year, some of these things you pay monthly. He goes, I want you to figure everything out monthly. So if you pay your car, you know, insurance off every 6 months, you know, mm-hmm. he goes, divide that out monthly. So he goes, you know where, you know, what your exact fixed expenditures are every single month.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing he did. He said, because you got to know what your, you know, what your baseline is, basically.
Yeah.
And then what he did is he said, he goes, so the fixed expenditures, he goes, you may be able to have some influence over. He goes, like, maybe you can get a little cheaper insurance or something like that. But he goes, you may not have a lot of, you know, a lot of control over those things. He said, the variable expenses that you really got to get a handle on. He said, because that's the piece that most people, they don't pay enough attention to, and they don't realize how much goes out in those variable expenses.
Yeah.
So what he did was he gave me just one of those little like 3x5 spiral bound notebooks.
Okay, yeah.
And he said, I want you to carry this with you. And he said, anytime you open your wallet, anytime you spend anything on anything, you know, any amount on anything, he goes, I want you to write it down over the course of the next month. Hmm. And I'm like, everything? He goes, everything, right? Hmm. And
so, like, cup of coffee.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, all of those, you know, you
fill
go
up
out,
the gas tank.
Right. You buy some music, you do, you know, whatever it is, you gotta write it down. And that was an eye-opening exercise as well.
Yeah.
I really had no idea how much all of those seemingly little inconsequential things added up.
Yeah. Yeah, so you were spending a lot more just out of pocket, pulling out your wallet a lot more often than you were initially thinking.
Exactly. You know, and And the other thing that it did, and this was interesting, is it made you aware of when you were doing it.
Yeah, because you had to pull it out.
Right.
So now you're thinking about it.
Exactly. So now you're much more conscious of you know, is this really, do I want to, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas before, I wasn't paying attention to that at all.
Yeah. Yeah, you're just pulling out your whatever, you're kind of just impulse.
Exactly.
Flying by the seat of your pants.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he had me do that for, you know, took about, you know, a month to go through and do all of that. And then we sat down again. And so we kind of created the categories.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked me, he goes, okay, now, he goes, how much do you want to spend in these categories?
Mm.
So literally we sat down and we went through it. He had me go home, talk to Michelle. And we consciously decided, and this was, it was kind of a cool exercise. So we consciously decided, like, you know, okay, how much do we want to spend on groceries every week? You know, and you know, how much do we want to spend on gas, and how much do we want to, so like literally consciously choosing rather than just having it, you know, having it go. The other thing that was really cool out of this was that, Michelle and I, he had each of us decide, you know, how much do we basically wanted to, you know, give ourselves every month to spend.
Hmm.
So, which was cool because it was like kind of the discretionary money, so to speak, right?
Sure.
So, you know, so often you see couples, they get in arguments because, you know, he went out and bought this, or she went out and bought that, and so they create this resentment.
Yeah.
But you know, Michelle and I, we each set a dollar figure.
Yeah.
And you know, that dollar figure was what we basically allowed ourselves to spend.
Yeah.
And it was totally discretionary, whatever we wanted to do with it, kind of thing. You know.
Yeah.
And so we never fought about that stuff after that. Because it's her money. She can do whatever the heck she wants with it. It was my money. I can do what I want with it. But it's just, this is
the amount. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you both had the same.
Right.
Yeah.
And so that was one of those things that it took a lot of stressors out of the relationship. But again, it helped us maintain a measure of control.
Yeah, sure. So, all right, so you go through, and for a month, he has you track everything.
Right.
At the end of the month, you categorize all those expenses, and you have totals for those categories. And then you're looking at that saying, okay, here's what it is now. What do we want it to be in terms of what we're spending these categories? And part of that was setting aside discretionary money for you and Michelle.
Yep.
Okay. So at this point, you know, you basically have your budget of what you want to stick to.
Yep.
It's one thing to have a budget.
Yep.
How did you actually stick to it? Because that's, I think, something that is just as important, if not more important, than having a, you know, just taking the time to put together a budget is, how do you break the habit of actually, you know, of actually sticking to it?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so here was, you know, back, credit cards were the kind of the bane of our existence kind of thing. And so, you know, in those early phases, and you know, we've gotten away from this more now. But in those early phases of things, we did everything in cash.
Mm.
And so we literally would have, you know, this is the money for groceries, you know, this month. And this is your money for this month. And this is your gas money for this month and my gas money for this month. And so, that contained it more. It took the variability away from
it. Sure. So you made it super simple to stick to. It's like, all right, I pulled out the envelope and this is what I got to spend on this.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So you kept it super simple for yourself. Was that basically it? Was it just making it simple enough to stick to, or, you know, what's to stop you from, I got this envelope in my pocket. I got this envelope for going to get gas, but I also know I have the grocery envelope in my back pocket. And I want to, you know, go into the gas station and buy some snacks or whatever.
Right.
You know, what's to stop you from doing that?
Basically, the fact that you wanted to eat the last 5 days of the month, you know.
Yeah.
Because it was, you could rob from Peter to pay Paul if you wanted to, but you knew you were gonna, you know, that was the fixed amount there was, so that you were gonna pay the price, in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. So did you have to change the way you were thinking about spending or about money in order to, you know, really buy into this?
It definitely, because of the way he set it up, I was decidedly very much an impulse spender. With this kind of a, I'll buy this now and figure out how I'll pay for it later.
Yeah.
And so by putting the structure in place, it was impossible for me to do that.
Yeah.
So it really it made everything much more deliberate.
Yeah. Okay. So you basically set up the system where you didn't really have a choice.
Right. There was limited opportunity to cheat.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's good. So he has you set up this budget, puts a system in place where here's your envelopes for all these different categories and what you spend for the month. And then at the end of the month for the next month, you kind of do the same thing and fill the envelopes back up.
Yep.
Okay. It keeps it super simple. Yep. And limited opportunity for cheating.
Exactly.
So part of that was just getting out of the habit of using credit cards, it sounds like.
Yeah, that was huge for, and that was really the second thing that, it's the second. So he had it first. We had to get control of our money, with the budget.
Yep.
So the second thing he did is he, we sat and we talked about, really about personal debt, and he, what he explained to me is he said there are incredibly smart people in the world who spend their entire careers scheming on how to keep us paying them interest.
Yeah.
And so he said, what most people fail to realize is how much of their net worth they lose to interest.
Yeah.
And
because it's just it's hard to see, I would imagine.
Like, exactly.
It's just because it's just these little bits at a time.
And it seems like, it's $30 a month that I pay in interest on my car payment, or $200 a month on my mortgage, and those kinds of things. And then, you don't think about them in the aggregate, over the course of that loan or the course of that mortgage, how much are you paying?
Yeah.
And not only that, but if you didn't have to pay that, and you were able to take that money instead and invest it over the course of time, what difference would that make?
Yeah. So not only are you not spending it, but you're actually making money. So instead of paying interest, you're making interest.
Right. Right. So So what he did is he said, I want you to put in place a plan where you're minimizing your personal debt. He goes, I want you to get to the point where if we can get to the point where you've eliminated it 100%, he goes, that's the ideal situation.
Yeah.
He goes, he says, if you have to have a mortgage, then have a mortgage, but have the shortest mortgage that you can and work to prepay it down. He goes, if you can get rid of it, he goes, don't have a car payment. He goes, get to the point where you own your vehicle and you're not making payments on it.
Yeah.
So, his philosophy was absolutely, either eliminate or minimize whatever that personal debt is. So again, you're keeping more of your money for yourself. In my case, that allows me to pay off my credit card debts.
Right.
And once that's paid off, then you can begin to, take that money and invest it.
Yeah.
One of the other things, and this was an interesting thing. So I 38 grand in credit card debt. Right?
Yeah.
So,
which is a lot, but I think a lot of people have maybe I think I saw a stat. It was like the average American's probably like 9 or 10 grand in credit card debt.
Yeah.
So it's like not an uncommon. And then, don't even touch the student loans.
Oh, yeah.
Which is however many trillions of dollars is you know, particularly my generation is
exactly
student loan debt.
So, you know, and it's not only $9,000 in debt, but look at what the average interest rate on that is,
yeah,
right? So,
it's,
you know,
really
for me,
high interest.
Yeah, for me back, you know, for me back in the days, you know, my average interest rate on that $38,000 was over 19%.
Jeez.
And so, you know, basically, again, I was taking one credit card and using it to make a minimum payment on another credit card.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you sit down and you know, and Jerry's like literally showing me this.
Yeah.
He goes, if you keep making the minimum payments, that's designed so that you will never pay off that credit card debt.
Huh.
So the bank's goal in that is to keep you paying them 19% interest for the rest
forever.
Of your life.
Yeah, because you're basically at that point with the interest, if you're doing minimum payment, you're just treading water.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, you're paying the, you're not, I think the misconception is people think that even if they're doing the minimum payment, they think that they're paying the debt down.
They're not.
They're not.
They're just covering the monthly interest.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So they're staying exactly where they are.
Exactly.
They're paying, you know, whatever it is, a couple hundred bucks to not go more into debt,
yep,
but to stay exactly the amount of debt that they're in.
Yeah. So here's what Jerry did. So he's explaining this dynamic to me, and he said, so what I want you to do, he goes, I want you to go negotiate with your credit card companies.
Hmm.
He said, right now, they're charging you 19%. He goes, the banks, he goes, that's the single most profitable product they have is their credit cards. And he said, so they don't want to lose you.
Hmm.
And he said, so that gives you real power with them. He said, so I want you to go and negotiate with them. And he goes, so you go and you negotiate that interest rate down.
Hmm.
And I'm like, well, how, you know, 27 years old. I go, how the hell do I negotiate with a bank?
Right.
Right. He goes, it's simple. He goes, you just call them up. You tell them that, you know, you're getting these other credit card offers in the mail where, you know, they're offering you this, you know, low introductory rate.
Mm-hmm.
If you, you know, sign up for their credit card. And so you just go and you tell them that, you know, you're really happy with their bank and you don't really want to leave, but, you know, these people are offering me a better deal. And say, can you offer me a better deal, you know, match what they're giving or, you know, or lower my rate, and then I won't go.
Yeah.
And they all did it.
It worked.
It absolutely freaking worked.
Really?
Yeah. So I call up Charter One, and
yeah,
you know, I go through my, you know, my spiel with them, kind of thing, and you know, next thing I know, I go from 19% to the, you know, back then the big thing was 0% introductory rates for the first 6 months, right?
Yeah.
So I go from 19% to 0% for the next 6 months, right?
Wow.
And then after 6 months, I go back and I negotiate again,
yeah,
right? So I literally took, you know, I had, I think it was 5 credit cards that balance was, you know, scattered out over.
Yeah.
I took the average interest rate from being over 19% to under 4%.
Wow.
Yeah. So now at least I'm in a position where, you know, because the rates are down, then at least I can start paying down some principal on these
right
things.
Yeah. Yeah. You're at least it's not, you're now making the minimum payment to stay exactly where I am.
Yep.
You can start working it down.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because I had there was only one bank that wouldn't negotiate with me.
Hmm.
And it was Capital One.
Okay.
Right. And, so I told him, I said, you know, then I'm gonna have to, you know, I'm gonna have to move my balance off of your card and you know, and to somewhere else. And yeah, they like dug their heels in, right?
Yeah.
So I literally took the money, I transferred it to it. I applied for another credit card. I transferred it onto that credit card and I canceled the Capital One, thing.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I probably get 3 credit card offers a week from Capital One to this day.
Yeah.
Right. You know?
Yeah.
And every time I get it, I look at it and I smile and I said, you just should have negotiated with me 27 years ago.
Yep.
You know?
Now you're never getting
it. I know.
Wow. All right. So you can, you know, so one kind of illusion that's broken in talking to Jerry is you could actually negotiate this stuff.
Yeah, I had no idea that you could do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought that. The interest is what it is.
Yeah.
And they're not going to change it.
Yeah.
The person you're going to talk to isn't going to have the power to change it,
right,
or whatever.
Yep. And only one bank wouldn't do it. Every other one, you know, they were willing to do it because, candidly, if you think about it, you know, again, the banks make money on the spread between, you know, if we've got a checking account with them that they pay us 1% interest on, right?
Yeah.
So the cost of the money to them is 1%. And then they're giving it to me on a credit card at 19%. Their spread is 18%.
Yeah.
So the if as long as they're getting more than 1%,
yeah,
it's still profitable to them.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Okay. So you can actually negotiate these things.
Yep.
So you negotiate the interest down. So you're in a spot where you're at least starting to pay down some of the some of the principal.
Yep. And then what he did was, he, you know, so we structured it from, you know, based upon interest rate, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he had me attack the credit cards that had the higher interest rates first.
Yeah.
And so, you know, as you know, my income was, you know, gradually starting to, you know, come up a little bit. Michelle at that point had gotten a job as a nurse. So we had her income coming in. So now we had a little more cash flow coming in. We had more structure over, you know, where we were spending our money. So that our lifestyle wasn't changing as, you know, as she got a job and, mm-hmm. you know, and as I started to make a little bit more money in my job. And so that gave us, you know, that gave us a little more money to be able to start actually working down that credit card debt. So
yeah.
We paid it off, highest interest rate to lowest interest rate.
Yeah.
It took me 3 years. To totally be able to pay that off.
Pay it off.
And it was one of those things where I didn't think it would ever get paid off, you know.
Yeah.
I thought and so it really seemed like a rather hopeless situation. And,
yeah.
And I mean, to this day I still remember the day I sent that last check to pay it off. And it was like the weight of the world was off my shoulders. It
yeah.
was such a cool feeling.
Yeah. So how did you stick to that over time? So, you know, because that could seem like an eternity, in 3 years to pay that debt down. How did you stick to that? How did you not just go, whatever, I'm never going to get out of this. I might as well, have some fun or,
yeah.
you know, whatever. How did you get yourself to stick to it?
Being broke was just such an incredibly crappy feeling.
Yeah.
And it's funny because it was that dumb can of clams. You know, I mean,
that's what did it.
I literally was like, I never want to be in that position again. I
yeah.
never want to be in a position where, you know, if Michelle wants to spend $3 on a can of clams,
that you want her to have the can of clams.
That I got to sit there and make a stink about it.
Yeah.
You know. I was just like, I never, ever, ever want to be in this position again.
Yeah. So it was the line, drew the line in the
sand. It was,
it
was just, I just kept reminding myself of that moment, you know,
yeah.
standing in the grocery store and her looking at me and with just utter dismay
mm-hmm.
and me digging my heels in over, you know, over a stupid can of clams.
Yeah.
And I just never wanted to feel that way again.
Yeah. So I would imagine there are times and probably a lot of the time during that phase of paying it off where you felt like thrown in the towel.
Mm-hmm.
Was that kind of your strategy was think
yeah.
of the can of clams?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that was kind of the image that was in my head. And there was also just a real satisfaction to, you get one credit card paid off and it's
yeah.
zero balance, right? And then you cut that credit card up and, you know, and it was like the sense of freedom.
Yeah.
You know, and so it was a really, really good feeling in that sense. And just a sense of accomplishment, you know?
Yeah.
And so, it, you know, here, you know, Michelle and I were, you know, we weren't having the money arguments that so many couples have.
Yeah.
You know, we feel like we're, you know, kind of making some progress, you know, in terms of things. So there was a, you know, a lot less stress, a better sense of satisfaction and, you know, in that regard. And just a sense of control.
Yeah.
That I didn't feel before.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So you get to this point, it takes you 3 years to pay down. You send the last check in.
Yeah.
What happens then?
Okay. So Jerry, he had us put a budget in place.
Yep.
He, you know, put me on the mission to, you know, to eliminate that, you know, that personal debt or at least the credit card debt, you know, at that phase.
Was that the singular mission at that time? Like, were you doing other things with your finances? You know, when he said, yeah, I put together a budget in mm-hmm. place and stick to it. All right, did that. And you stick to it. All right, next is minimize personal debt. Was there anything else from a financial standpoint that you were working on at that point?
Yeah.
Or were you basically nothing else matters until you pay down the debt?
Definitely the biggest goal was getting rid of the credit card debt.
Yeah.
You know, because it was the highest interest rate debt.
Right.
You know, he also basically did the same thing with me, you know, as it relates to the mortgage and the car payments and those types of things. But mm-hmm. the credit card, the interest rate was just higher on that.
Right.
So there was much more of a focus in that regard in the early phases.
Yeah.
You know, once the credit card debt was gone, then the next mission was, you know, making sure that we don't have car payments, you know, and then, you know, from that point, then it was attack the mortgage and get to the point where, you know, you're out from underneath that burden. And
yeah.
So literally it was, how do you get to the point where you don't have to pay anybody interest?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So so you get to the point and you start working down, all those different types of debt.
Yeah.
When you get to that point, in the midst of, mm-hmm. of working down that debt, is there anything else in terms of getting more control over your money that Jerry was pointing you to?
Yeah. So, so after we got rid of the credit card debt, then what he did, we always bought used cars, mm-hmm. you know, because used cars, you don't have the big depreciation. So he said, He said, you want to look for something? He goes, about 3 years old. He goes, is where you want to go. Because he goes, if you can find something that's about 3 years old, he goes, it's, you know, you're not at the point where you're going to have a bunch of maintenance stuff. He goes, you may have still some warranty left on it. He goes, so you got a good, reliable car, but somebody else has eaten all the depreciation on it.
Yeah, that's smart.
So he guided us in that way. In fact, he actually introduced us to a guy, Ron Casamento. Oh, there was a
wow.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool.
So Ron was a guy at the time who was an ophthalmologist and sold used cars on the side.
Hmm.
So his big thing was Toyotas.
Okay.
So he would go to the car auctions and get these relatively newer low mileage Toyotas and mm-hmm. And then bring them back and flip them.
Yeah.
And so. So we bought our cars from Ron,
okay.
You know, and so he gave us a good deal on them and stuff like that. So that allowed us to, you know, to make sure that we weren't overpaying for cars, you know, and we got them paid off as quickly as possible.
Yeah.
With the mortgage, what he did, our mortgage was a 30-year mortgage. But what he did is he said, I want you to take your mortgage payment and he said, divide it in half. And he said, and so you get paid every 2 weeks. He said, so he goes, if you know, I think our mortgage payment at that point in time was, I think it was about $1,200 a month or something to that effect, which seems really reasonable by today's standards.
Yeah.
So he said, divide it in half, $600, every 2 weeks.
Yep.
And he said, so send on the 15th, send $600 to your bank. He goes, and on the 30th, send $600 to the, you know, to your bank.
Hmm.
So I was like, well, what difference does that make?
He goes,
figure it out. He goes, if you do it that way, right? If you do it that way, he goes, if you pay it monthly, he goes, you're going to make 12 payments a year.
Yeah.
He goes, if you do it, if you send them $600 every 2 weeks, he goes, you're going to make 26 payments this year. He goes, so divide that in half because it's, you know, he goes, that's 13 payments. So you're making one extra monthly, the equivalent of one extra monthly payment a year.
Huh.
He goes, and what that'll do is, he goes, it'll cut about a third off of your mortgage, the life of your mortgage. He goes, so if you have a, he goes, if you got a 30-year mortgage, he goes, you'll pay it off in about 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
simple,
crazy.
Yeah. Simple little, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, geez, you know.
Jerry the mailman.
Yeah. Jerry was a genius.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Jeez.
So, you know, so that's how he helped us to begin to, you know, get past the car payments and then to get the house paid off that much faster, you know. Now, the great thing is that once we got rid of the credit card debt, we had more money that we could throw towards the cars, get the cars paid off. Once we got the cars paid off, then we had more money that we could throw towards the mortgage.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it was kind of a cascading effect that allowed us to get, you know, out from under the mortgage as well.
Yeah. So what was the thing that allowed you to kind of stick to this of you're at this point, you're basically declaring war on any sort of debt, any sort of interest.
Yeah.
That's not particularly sexy or exciting.
No, not in the least.
So what is it that allowed you to stick to that as opposed to, you know, doing a little bit of working it somewhat, but, you know, not being quite as strict or stringent. And you know, especially as your income starts to go up, how are you not like, let's just splurge a little bit and do, you know, this, that, or the other thing.
Well, so that did happen. You know, what happened was, as you know, as we got out from underneath the credit card debt, that was the first big hurdle.
Yeah.
But, you know, simultaneous as that was happening, you know, Michelle had gotten a job, I was making more money. So what we did is we adjusted that discretionary, you know, basically, if you think about it, it's kind of like her money and my money.
Yeah.
You know, so we adjusted that.
Okay.
So that we had a little bit, you know, we had more discretion there, but there were still boundary lines.
Yeah.
You
sure.
know, to keep us in check. But the other thing we did is, you know, in the budget we had, you know, as some of the pressures came off, we, you know, put more money in there for entertainment, you know, and those kinds of things. And that also helped. So it didn't feel like we were on this highly restrictive diet where, you know, we didn't have any money we could ever spend or anything like that. So, there was wiggle room.
Yeah. You gave yourself a little slack.
Exactly.
What was your self-talk like through this phase? You know, cause this is a few years, I'd imagine.
It's funny because, so this 27 years ago.
Yeah.
Right. I still do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And really? All the same strategies.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, all the same strategies. I mean, it's different. It's different now than it was then.
Sure.
Because we're just in a different place in our life, you
sure.
know? But in terms of the structure side of things,
yeah,
it's all those things are still in place.
Yeah. So how have you developed that? It's really stuck to that over this period of time because it is, especially like the more that the more freedom, I guess, or the more liquidity you have, the easier it would be to just say, I don't need to do that anymore.
Yeah. You know, there's a tremendous peace of mind that comes from having a measure of control over your finance. Look at it this way, okay? I remember years ago listening to a guy speak, and he talked about the difference between a prosperity mindset and a poverty mindset. And this is how he described it. He said, he goes, you know how you feel when you're walking around and you've got a dollar in your wallet?
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, that's the poverty mindset. You know, you're just you're walking around and you got a dollar in your pocket.
You know, you got a dollar.
That's all you got is a dollar.
Yeah.
He goes, versus walking around and having $1,000 in your pocket.
Yeah.
He goes, that's a prosperity mindset.
Yeah.
And you carry yourself differently based upon that, because you just have, you don't worry about things the same way.
Yeah.
You know, people don't realize how big of a stressor money is. I mean, it's the number one thing couples fight about.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, you know, imagine being able to put yourself in a place where you don't have that stressor.
Yeah. And that's really what the driver was.
Yeah.
Was for you.
Yeah, because I didn't even know that place existed.
Yeah.
You know, prior to meeting Jerry.
Yeah.
You know, I thought this is just how it is. You go through life and you're just always going to be stressed out about money, and you're never going to have enough, and you know, you're going to be worrying at the end of the month about, you know, how am I going to pay these bills, or, you know, you know, what am I going to do, and, you know, not sleeping at night, and, you know, all, I just thought
that's how it was.
That's how you lived your life.
Yeah.
And he taught me, you don't have to live your life that way.
So that was kind of the end game, where that place and peace of mind emotionally is what kind of drove you to stick to it, and continues to drive you to stick to it.
Absolutely.
So, and I would imagine too, it's the, you know, you've mentioned a few times, just like this sense of control, mm-hmm. Where, you know, in terms of looking at debt and interest, it seems like a lot of what, you know, with beyond the math of how much more gets paid out, mm-hmm. You know, where Jerry was is all of this debt and all of this interest is you not being in control of your own.
It's somebody else life. Controlling.
Somebody else is controlling you. Yep. So get rid of anybody else having any control over what you can do.
Exactly.
That would be, I think, a big motivating factor as well.
Yep.
Even beyond the numbers and decimal points.
Yeah.
Okay. So you kind of mentioned like this is two phases, mm-hmm. basically, where you're getting control over your money. And then once you have control over your money, you're building your net worth.
Yeah. You know, there's one other thing that Jerry did too. We should talk about.
Okay.
He had me adopt what he called a save and buy mentality.
Mm.
So, you know, up to this point in time, as I mentioned, I was kind of an impulsive spender. So it was, you know, I'll buy it now, figure out how to pay for it, you know, at the end of the month, or I'll buy it now, put it on a credit card, I'll pay it off at the end of the month. Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, so as he described it, he says, save and buy is, he goes, establish a set amount of money, right? And anything that is more expensive than that set amount of money, he goes, I want you to save for and then pay cash for, right? And so I remember I was like, well, Jerry, you know, like, what's the big deal? I mean, isn't that basically the same thing as just, you know, if I pay the credit card bill off at the end of the month,
right?
You know, I said it's, you know,
same thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
And he goes, no. He goes, it's not. He said, he goes, if you put in place a save and buy mentality, right? So, for us, back at that point in time, it was $200, right?
Okay.
Was kind of our floor.
Yep. So anything over $200,
you save and buy for, with the exception of cars and houses.
Sure. Yeah.
Right. So if we needed a new TV or, you know, a washing machine or, you know, whatever, you know, kind of thing like that. And so I remember I was talking to him about it, and he goes, so here's what the save and buy mentality would do for you. He said, he goes, number one, he goes, it's going to stop you from making those impulse purchases. He goes, so it's going to force you to really think through things like, do I really want this? Do I really need this? You know, is this something that's, you know, of critical importance?
Yeah. Curbs the impulse.
Exactly. Excuse me. He said that, he goes, the other thing it'll do, he goes, you're buying yourself time to do the research, to make sure that you're, you know, that you're getting the best deal, that you're buying the best product. And so he goes, it gives you time to, you know, to really do the research. He said the third thing it'll do, he goes, you'll find that it makes you really appreciate the things that you buy a lot more, because you'll value them more because you saved for them, you paid cash for them.
Yeah.
And all three of those things were 100% true.
Yeah.
You know, it was it absolutely, you know, you can't have a save and buy mentality and impulse purchase. You know, it just it absolutely curbs that. It forces you to think about, you know, is this really that important?
Right. Do I really need this?
And there were back, I mean, I can think of scores of things back in the day where, you know, I was, I really need, you know, and then, you know, 20, 30 days later, I was like, yeah, I don't really need it.
Yeah.
You know,
toss it in the closet or whatever it was.
And the things that I did, you know, I did stick with and I did save for, he was 100% right. I mean, I valued those things so much more because I had done the research, because, you know, I'd really made sure that I got the best deal for my money or the best product for what I was paying.
Yeah.
So that's another thing that we've stuck with over time. Now the dollar amount is, you know, is we've gotten older and stuff has changed, but that, you know, the save and buy mentality is, again, it's something still to this day we still do.
Yeah. Wow. So in terms of getting control of your money, there's, you know, there's the budget piece, which I would imagine now, you could probably do at this moment, if you just look at your credit card statement or your online statement, whatever.
Especially if you're a person, I mean, now we use cash a lot less than we ever used to.
Yeah.
Which again, I don't know is necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, again, there's a lot of very smart people who strategize that if we make the process of spending money easier, people will spend more money,
sure.
You know, and the fact that the average person's carrying $9,000 in credit card debt, I think pretty well proves that.
Yeah, sure.
So there's not, you know, there's, I think there's something to be said about going back to, you know, maybe a little bit more of a cash-based mentality, because then it's a bit more real.
Yeah, make it harder for yourself to spend the money.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So the big things with gaining control were budget.
Yep.
Minimizing debt, and this save and buy kind of mentality that he instilled. So at this point, those were kind of the three pillars, I guess, if you will, of the first phase, which is get control over your money.
Right.
And then you mentioned the second phase, and the second phase is more about, okay, now once you have control of your money, that's the, I guess, more the exciting part of building, you're building your net worth from that point.
Exactly.
So why don't we do this? Because we dove pretty deep on this one. Why don't we make this a two-parter?
Yeah,
We can get a break. You can get a refresh in your cough drop cappuccino.
Yeah. I know the tickle's coming back in the throat here.
Yeah.
So time to get another menthol cappuccino.
Uh-huh. Yep. Coming to a Starbucks near you. all right. Let's do that.
What's the guy's name? Howard. What's his Schultz?
Yeah.
So Howard, if you're listening, buddy, I want a royalty on that.
Yeah, give us a shout out, and it doesn't need it. Just you'll be like the Whopper guy for McDonald's.
There you go.
Just one percenter, you'll be set.
I'm totally cool with that. Yeah, I'm totally cool with that.
All right, so we'll do a part two on this, and part two is going to be the exciting stuff of
building your net worth. There you go.
And so we'll circle back around to that.
A little cliffhanger.
Yeah.
There you go. All right.
Hey guys, one more thing before you take off. This is Motivational Intelligence Insider. It's just a very short, exclusive email every Monday that comes from Dave, John, and the guests on this show. This is the only place they share their very, very best stuff, and it's delivered right to your inbox every single Monday. This could include exclusive tips for upping your game, articles they're reading, videos they're watching, stories from the road, and on and on. It's the best way to kick off your week, and this content is comes directly from Dave, John, and the guests, and is only available to subscribers of Motivational Intelligence Insider. So if you want these guys and gals to email you their best stuff, go to twological.com/insider. That's the number 2logical.com/insider and drop in your email. And if you do, I hope you enjoy.
The Motivational Intelligence Podcast is produced by the team at Two Logical. Two Logical is an international corporate training firm and the world's leading expert in motivational intelligence, which is the ability to understand, manage, and change the motives people have. Two Logical offers over 30 different keynotes, workshops, and full training courses to small, medium, and large Fortune 500 companies in 53 countries, a lot of which you're probably familiar with. Pfizer, Bank of America, GE, Constellation Brands, P&G, and more. All solutions are completely customized, and the feedback from these sessions will blow your mind. If you have any training or speaking needs or just want to say hey, head over to twological.com.